Welcome to the Forbidden Apple Podcast, where we explore the relationship between queer people and religion.
They say faith can move mountains, and we want to know what faith means to you.
Join our conversation as we discuss overcoming prejudices, find common ground, and celebrate our differences. A former Orthodox Jew
and a Spanish-raised Catholic meet weekly and sink our teeth into
the Forbidden Apple.
The Forbidden Apple.
Hi, everybody.
And welcome to another episode of
The Forbidden Apple. I am Melissa Weiss.
And I am Pelayo Alvarez.
And today
we have Reverend Yolanda and Glenn Ganaway, who have created an immense ministry in New York and have so many activities that we are so excited to talk about. So I just want to go ahead and ask you, how are you doing? How's everything with you? And just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Reverend Yolanda, and my name is Reverend Glenn Morton, Ganaway Integral Mentor, and your favorite anarchist preacher.
Indeed. So, yes, we're fine. We're just at home working and eating a lot. I love to cook, so lots of food over here. Mm-hmm. You know, just carrying on with our ministry online. We do our weekly Wednesday night meetings and our Sunday night meetings. Mm-hmm. So we're just carrying on. I'm writing new music. I'm still in process of releasing a new CD. We're just keeping going, just staying at home.
We've had an online ministry for a little over 5 years,
yeah,
with Awakening Together Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing a Zoom class on A Course in Miracles for, mm-hmm, a little bit over 5 years.
Yeah.
So this, you know, I've been going out to Colorado and Nova Scotia and South America for about 5 years over the radio doing, yeah, A Course in Miracles.
Yeah, we're just continuing what we always do, really. I've been writing songs now for over 20-something years, so I have my whole archive up on my website, and now I'm creating some new music.
That's amazing, and I love your music. It's so positive. It just fills you up with joy, energy, and so many good things. Is it based your music on, like, mantras from The Course of Miracles? How is it connected? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, well, most of my music is based on A Course in Miracles, and also a teacher by the name of Louise Hay. And then I interpret those teachings and create the songs on the website. And also currently right now, over the past few years, my dear sweet husband has introduced me to Sanskrit and Punjabi mantras, which are just so life-giving and beautiful to me. And so we've been learning them and singing them together now for about, I guess, 5 years or more.
Yeah.
And so now, currently, I'm releasing a CD of my interpretations of my favorite mantras. I've already released Waheguru Ji Kal Khalsa, and now my second release, which is coming out on April 20th, is called A Des to Say A Des. So Waheguru Ji Kal Khalsa is a greeting in Punjabi that expresses the light in you sees the light in me, and it brings us together in this acknowledgement of our divinity. So this is really nourishing both of us, mm-hmm, at this time.
And it even has a tradition in the Judeo-Christian that we grew up in, because,
yeah,
all of us grew up singing psalms.
Yeah.
So this is like kind of our personal, mm-hmm, like psalm book. So it's a mesh, mm-hmm, of the very new and the very old saying the same, mm-hmm, thing in, you know, Yolanda's incredible Muscle Shoals swampy sort of 70s rock and roll sound, and we're having a really good time of bringing our own personal aspects into that.
Yeah.
And you know, because,
yeah,
we actually listen to mantra a lot.
All the time. I've
collected it for about 25, 30 years. Mm-hmm.
But for anybody who doesn't know a lot about The Course of Miracles and what it is, just explain a little bit what The Course of Miracles is and what you do every week on your Wednesday meeting, please.
A Course of Miracles is a channeled book like the Quran and like the Pentateuch in the Torah by Helen Schuckman in 1964, 65. She heard a voice that said, "This is A Course in Miracles." And she thought she was going insane. She worked with her own team of sociologists in her own office in order to create the see whether this was a valid thing, whether she was losing her mind or not. And it was published in its current. It was published in 1973, 74, and entered into the public domain immediately, so that there's no church, there's no copyright. The Course in Miracles. It reads like a lifted text in King James speech, languaging. Mm-hmm. So it gets by a lot of our Western minds, like, this is true. You hear the thous and those and buts and our Father who art in heaven, and it just sinks right in as the truth. A Course in Miracles is in an inward journey to find out your gifts to the world and bring them to be happy and fulfilled. And joyous.
No matter what's going on.
Right.
So, gosh, there's so many things we can say about A Course in Miracles, but basically I want to emphasize that there are daily lessons.
Yes.
And there are 365 of those. So every day you have a lesson. A Course in Miracles does not support the idea that we are sinners or born in sin or any of that kind of, Jesus is our friend, you know, our elder teacher. He is not someone who saves us from sin.
Stands above us.
Or stands above us in any way. We save ourselves and each other.
By changing our mind about who we are. You suffer, we suffer, because we don't
know who we are.
Right. We don't believe it. We don't know who we are. And we certainly don't act like it.
Right.
My question is, so now there's immense suffering, right? And how does all of this help you during this time?
Great question. Personally, it helps me because it helps me remember who I truly am. I learn to listen to guidance. And sometimes the guidance comes from the TV. Sometimes it comes from my inner voice. And my inner voice always clarifies for me what the next right step is for me to do. We're not denying that people are dying or having illnesses. I myself am HIV positive. That's why I'm staying inside, you know. A Course in Miracles connects me, grounds me with who I truly am. And that connection, reflects in the actions that I perform in my life.
The thing that the Course in Miracles says more than anything else is, I am not a body. I am free. I am still as God created me.
Okay. Now, that doesn't mean that you neglect your body. I'm just putting that caveat in there.
Right. Bodies are wonderful. She calls your body a learning device. Please do not compare your life to someone else's. Mm. Each of us knows somebody that has tremendous challenges, that is happy and joyous and free. Changing my mind about who I am is how I bring about happiness, not living for a body.
For sure. Do you remind each other of this? Like when you are, if you have a moment of doubt or a moment of fear.
Oh, yes.
Nobody does this alone.
We're a good team that way. Yeah. And actually,
nobody does this alone.
So in the situation that we're in right now in the world, this is really, in our minds, becoming really evident. Nobody does this alone. Life does not happen alone. I don't care how solitary you think you are not. Look at who our heroes are, our grocery clerks, our pharmacy clerks,
truckers,
migrant farm workers.
You're eating because all other people aren't staying at home.
The list of people that we didn't give a thought about 3 weeks ago or a month ago.
The least
of these, as Christ would say in the Bible, are now our modern day heroes.
Front line.
Amazing.
Doing it for $15 an hour or less.
Take this opportunity. Yes, there is immense suffering. And I will suggest that there always has been immense suffering. I'm 63 years old. I have not lived in a time in America when there wasn't immense suffering by some part of the population. Uh-huh. And a lot of that time, that part of the population that was suffering includes me.
So now that the virus is able to, now that everybody's susceptible to the virus, now we're all worried.
So I know people grow out of pain, right? And I'm wondering, is because you have been included in the groups that have suffered throughout your lifetime, right? Did that prepare you for this?
Hello, I know suffering. Yes, yes, yes. You're right. We've always been in a marginalized community, you know, as early as the fourth grade, and probably, and I think Glenn too, around that time, I have suffered, quote unquote, from the hands of people who think queer's bad, wrong, blah, 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 all of that, going to hell and all that stuff. Plus, during the AIDS crisis in the 80s, you know, I contracted HIV, and my health went down very swiftly, and I had a lot of symptoms and all of that kind of thing. And I recovered, thank God, you know. So some of my friends did not. However, I am prepared for this time. I have actually known about this time coming from prophecies and different information that I received in my experiences in what we call the New Age movement and things like that. So I'm not surprised at where we are. Mother Nature is writing herself, you know, and she is going to be here long past the human race. But I do think that the human race has a chance right now to really look at what's valuable.
I think we have a shot at integrating ourselves back into nature.
Yeah.
Because this virus or this, you know, every disease, every bit of suffering says you're at odds with your environment. Mm. We as human beings cannot reproduce without a virus inside of ourselves. We are now moving into environments that we've never really lived in. So either we're going to learn from this environment to learn and grow and become a part of and acknowledge ourselves as part of nature, or we're going to die.
Is that part of the stuff that you said that you had prophecies or you knew things are happening? Is it because you saw that we were at odds with nature?
Well, yes. I've known that we are at odds with nature ever since I can remember myself breathing. However, in the 80s, I was fortunate to sit under several channelers and to study the writings of Sun Bear, who actually predicted these times that we are in right now. I'm so reminded of it now, certainly, but with that knowledge, I received it, and I was able to move through my life in a way that I think was a preparedness, like I began to prepare. And what I mean by preparing is listen to the voice of spirit. Over the years, my faith has gotten deeper and deeper and deeper. And what I mean by faith is the listening to the inner voice, the voice that likes you, the Wahe Guru, to see what step is next. And that's a spiritual practice. So, you know, what Glenn and I do every morning together is we meditate, we spend half hour or so in silence and meditation. That is really great, certainly right now, to awaken your connection to that voice that will literally tell you what to do, you know, and it may be a voice, an actual voice that you hear. Glenn does hear an actual voice. Mine is more intuition based, but those are examples of how I move through this time.
There's lines of development everybody has. Right. Some people are good at one thing and some people are good at another. You can come to this same conclusions in very different ways. Mm-hmm. We can look at all kinds of literature. I don't care what version of the literature you want to look at, politics or nature or spirituality or math.
And we just haven't been paying attention. For as long as I've been on the earth, we have not been paying attention as a society, as a culture, as a world to nature. So now's our chance.
Yay!
How was it for you that you have lived through the HIV crisis and suffered it directly? How does the situation then resemble now? And how the situation then prepared you to the situation now?
I actually don't like to compare the AIDS crisis to what's happening now. There are similarities. However, I'll just say that everyone in the world is affected at this point by what's happening. When we first discovered AIDS, it was quote unquote only a whatever disease. It was only assigned to certain segments of society. All of that is
still true.
Well, it's off the table right now because, you know, COVID, doesn't matter how much money you have, doesn't matter if you're the president or who, it doesn't matter. Anybody, doesn't matter what your sexual activities are, your proclivities, doesn't matter.
What would happen if COVID only showed up in the Haitian population and the gay population?
Yeah.
How different would the response
be? So that, let's just leave it there.
I know that you went together to the same spiritual center. And I know that you were very different people from when you started to when you finished it. So if you tell us a little bit more about the journey.
Perfect. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about mine and then I'll let Glenn tell you about his. In a way, they're similar. We were both raised in the South. I was born and raised in Alabama. You know, always went to church and was very interested in spiritual things from a young age. At the time, I didn't know anything but, you know, the Christianity that was offered to me, so I didn't know about other world religions. In my teens, I joined a Christian commune. We were called Jesus Freaks back then in the 70s and had a band and all of that kind of thing. And that's when I decided that was what I wanted to do with my life, was be a music minister. However, I also fell in love with a member of the band, a guy, and I had to leave the commune and it ruined my life. You know, I went to college, became a theater major, moved to New York City, and basically had rejected my Christian upbringing when I found the new age movement, which actually brought me back into a sense of spirituality. And I learned that time actually about A Course in Miracles. I learned about shamanism and witchcraft and paganism and the connection to the goddess. And I learned how to read tarot. And then I met a group of people called the Radical Fairies, which are queer spiritual people. And I moved into a commune with them in Vermont. And from that point, I grew by leaps and bounds with my embracing of feminine spirituality and goddess spirituality and became Yolanda. Then moved back to New York City in 2001, right a few days before 9/11, and had somewhat of a spiritual crisis. It turned me in a different direction. It was the same time that I met Glenn, and we began to study A Course in Miracles together. And A Course in Miracles led us to go to seminary, One Spirit Interfaith Seminary, studying many different spiritual paths all around the world, different cultures, different paths, and learning how to build bridges between communities. That was when I became Reverend Yolanda and started the current ministry that I have now. And so what I feel now is that I've come full circle in my desire as a teenager to become a music minister, because that is truly what I am at this point now. So how about you?
Oh, I don't know. I came out to myself when I was journaling and looking up Bible verses when I was 9 years old.
Nine!
So I've been I've got journals that go back to 9 years old.
Woo!
Of me discussing my, you know, crushes on boys and Jesus and all of those good things.
Oh, that, Jesus was a big crush of mine.
Uh-huh. I know. What do you do? But I really love nature. My mother tells a story of me just hovering over an anthill, being completely absorbed with the world around me. So I've always had this connection with a very, very, very close connection with the earth and nature and systems and animals and like the forest and things like that in the mountains. But my dad's a Southern Baptist preacher. And in the Navy and a chaplain. So I grew up in a very interfaith home. And I really love that work. I became the youth minister for Veersville Baptist Church in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Yeah.
Until they found out about, you know, some extracurricular activities of mine. And I'll leave you to your imagination about what those extracurricular activities are. But it became quite clear that I was not looking for a lovely woman to settle down and build the church around. So I left the church, or the church left me, however you want to say that. I got a sort of an associate's degree in philosophy. I dropped out and became a junkie in Kansas City and did a lot of sex work and waited tables for most of the 80s and got cleaned up and just discovered the Radical Fairies. And what the Radical Fairies gave me was permission to have my own personal spirituality and not borrow from somebody else, to have my own direct experience with what was divine, whether it was the woods or whether it was the goddess or whether it was God. I'll tell you, every one of these tattoos I have is a huge spiritual experience, mind-blowing, out-of-body light stuff. So I'll talk to my tattoos about it another time, but my spiritual journey is written all over my body.
And mine is written in my paintings, which is what, so I have paintings all over the house, but his is on his body, creating artwork on his body. Mine was also creating music and artwork.
Outward expression.
Yeah, outward expression.
When did you start getting comfortable with self-expression? When you were surrounded by people that were doubting you or telling you that you weren't good enough?
Yeah. Well, I want to say earlier, like for me, even growing up in Alabama, like I was an odd person out, actually. Of course, I knew myself. I came out in the fourth grade. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really care what people thought. Like people, I knew that everybody else was stupid and I was right, you know, like people were, you know, I didn't care what they thought. My parents, my brother, the school, the principal, they were all like, okay, whatever you want to do, I'm going to be over here and chronicle my journey and my paintings and, you know, the songs I write and this, that, and the other. So I had a grip on it like early, but then I kind of lost it midway, say, early 20s. I really kind of lost my way. And again, it was the Radical Fairies that brought me back into my own sense of spirituality.
For me, it was really similar. I just created a secret life. Okay, you don't like this about me. You don't like the way I behave, that. Okay, I'll just go away. So if I, you know, that's what I did as a coping mechanism until I met the Radical Fairies, and I was able to give myself permission. Goes, I'm not going to let them, determine what I do or how I act or how I appear.
We certainly, ever since we both became involved with the Radical Fairies, that was the huge turning point where you never go back.
Permission.
Where you say, okay, this is mine. It doesn't matter what anybody else has to say about it or anything. You know, this is mine and I'm pursuing my journey, you know.
TFP.
Yeah.
how beautiful is to hear you talk about your journey and to see how, like, you're talking about, like, all these things that happened in the past and you have accepted them so radically. You have, like, a radical acceptance to your past and you just don't let it affect you, define you, or anything. How have you came to embrace yourself to the level that you are right now with yourselves and with each other also?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I want to say personally, it was through suffering. So suffering served a big purpose for me. I finally got tired of suffering, you know. So even though I really didn't care what other people had, you know, to say about me because I was going to do what I was going to do, regardless, I still allowed it to hurt me for many, many years. Then there came a time when even that didn't matter, because the Course in Miracles lesson that says, I am not a victim of the world I see, just, I don't know, somehow gave me what I needed to totally accept and move forward and to radically forgive all that has happened before me. Forgiveness is for you. When I forgive something or an action or things that have occurred, currently I'm forgiving the world, you know, for being what it is. When I do that, I release myself from suffering.
I think that radical internalization, that radical internalized part was, first, I gave myself permission to pursue what I wanted to do in the world. And that was be a radical preacher. You know, I really, you know, just said, okay, fine, I'll do it. I'll do it. And I don't know where it was going. Everything in me said, you can't do this. Everything in me said, you can't do this. It'll be tough. No one's going to, you know, everything I knew. And giving myself permission because I was chewing Yolanda's ear off. And she says, I can't not listen to you lecture about the Course in Miracles or the world or these spiritual concepts anymore. You have to go get a podium. You have to go get a podium. You have to get a room. You have to go say this on a street corner because I can't listen to you anymore.
And that's when we created our Wednesday night group.
Right, that's what we're doing. But I had to fall in love with myself. Really want to be me in the world because I love myself. And it's not a joke. I forgive myself. My life feels good and I can have what I want.
I love this. And it's amazing that you sing it together and you preach it together. And I'm wondering how I watched one of your Yolanda, I watched your video that you had on your website from like 20 something years ago. It's been a while and I'm sure you've grown and you seem a lot more yourself and in your own body and in your own soul. And I'm wondering what's the biggest change you feel right now compared to then?
I want to say that I think the biggest difference between then and now is that now I truly know that I am not male. At the time of the video that you are mentioning, I was still, even though I was involved with right in the heart of the queer movement and I ran a transgender support group, as a matter of fact, but I still did not quite understand that I was not male. I was still identifying as male. And I used to think of myself as a very odd male, but still male. And now I am free and I know that I am not male. And I say that in the presence of my husband, who fell in love with a person who identified as male and is still in love with me. How about that? Right? So that's a scary thing. I know, right? But so the realization that I am not male freed me from, I don't know, tons of oppression, you know, that I didn't even realize that I had. Like back in the day when I was talking about queerness, you know, I mean, I was as sincere as I knew how to be at that time. That's why I have the disclaimer on my website, you know. I was saying probably things that are not politically correct right now. However, one has to figure one's own self out, you know. And it just so happened that my figuring out of it was recorded on video. But thanks for asking that question, because that is truly, I think, the biggest change.
I think my biggest change is I'm really okay if you don't like me. I'm really completely okay if you disagree. Uh-huh. You think I'm, you know, all these awful, awful things. For the first time in my life, it's like that I can really walk away from you. You know, I can really, really, absolutely, without ever thinking about you again, walk away.
And it's fine. And nobody's hateful.
I'm not even mad. I'm not mad.
Not mad about
I'm
it.
Not anything. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you hate me? I'm really okay with that.
Thank you for sharing. And it's so nice to see your relationship, because it's so interesting that you're this like anarchist energy. And then Yolanda is this like pure love and openness. And just, and I love the way that you work well together. It's very beautiful to see Thank that. You. And so now what we usually close off, we ask what advice you would share for people that are either anything that you've been through that can help other people get through it.
And I would love if it would be in a form of like a mantra, because I know that it's your specialty. So if you feel like sharing one of your super powerful mantras, I would love that.
You know, I mean, my most favorite thing that I honestly has, it's been the most profound healing mantra in my entire life, and I still use it, and its power, and it's I love myself. And so if you would like to sing along, we'll do a little call and response, and it goes like this: I love myself.
I love myself.
I forgive myself.
I forgive myself.
My life feels good.
My life feels good.
I can have what I want.
I can have what I want.
And I choose joy.
I choose peace.
For all beings, for all lives.
For the universe.
Because I love myself.
Because I love myself. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh. It's awesome. Thank you. I feel like I want to reach out to you when I'm having like a rough day and just sing to me, please.
Please. So, we get that all the time. We get that. Both of us get that. I get it like twice a day. Yolanda gets it about three times a day. I'm serious.
I love it. I really might take you up on that offer. Just be like, let's sing.
Take us up on it. I guess if I was going to give you advice for a mantra, there's a story that comes to mind. There's a bodhisattva who is called Avalokiteshvara, and the story is that he was gonna save the world. He was gonna make sure that everybody gets saved, everybody gets the truth, and everybody's gonna come into heaven, not ever get reborn again. And he was like, I'm gonna be the last one in heaven. I'm gonna sit at the edge of heaven and make sure that I'm gonna be the last one in. We're gonna get everybody in heaven, and then I'm gonna go in. And I get emotional because this is really dear to me. He was crying because he realized how long this was going to take, how long he was going to sit at the edge of heaven and not go in for his love of humanity. So he begins to weep, and a lake forms at his feet, this lake of the tears of a bodhisattva. Mm. And from this lake, one day rose Tara, this fully formed avatar of hope.
Yeah.
And she said, "Don't worry. I'll help. And her mantra is Om Tare Tutare Tare Soha.
Oh, we can do that one too.
And it's you never say her name, but it's a pun over and over and over again that says, I call on the one who will help. And you know what? Tara has to answer.
Mm.
So when you're queer and you form a family and you choose your family, when someone says, will you help me? You don't really have a choice,
do you? You say yes.
You say yes. There are people who love you that you don't even know that love you.
The grocery store workers.
You are deeply, deeply loved. If you just know this, I deeply love you.
Yes.
Om Tare Tutare Tare Soha.
Let's sing it. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Swaha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Swaha.
So,
I have to record that one.
Awesome. Right. Oh, I love it. It's great advice. Thank you for being open and sharing with us. And I'm sure this has cheered me up. I'm sure it'll cheer people up. And we can use those mantras. And it's been it's been amazing. Even listening to your songs.
Yeah, it's been great.
And like coming to your, we've been missing the 2-drink minimum in person. Yeah. Hopefully when the world gets back to something.
Where can people find your events that will be happening through Zoom, your songs, everything?
Yes. We'll be sending out emails and all that kind of stuff. So y'all, if you want to join us, please do. Thank you so much for having us on the podcast. Thank you so very, very much for asking us to join you today.
Bye. Thank you so much. Bye. Have a good day.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of
The Forbidden Apple.
I am Melissa Weiss.
I am Pelayo Alvarez.
Have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye.